You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
It's 7:01 p.m. I'm almost done with Stranger Things. Got 2 more episodes to watch. I will watch both of those tonight. And we need to talk about it in depth. In depth. Because I gotta tell you something. It took me a while to get this far because I had so much stuff to do. But I knocked out a whole chunk of it today with Lauren. We had a pretty flexible afternoon, and we polished off like 4 episodes. And everything I thought that this was going to be, it's so much more than that. There's shade right off the bat. There's like shades of E.T. I love the setting, 1983. And I don't know, just the synthwave soundtrack and the music and... I just love anything that has to do with a plot involving kids, especially in that era, you know, because it's pretty much like the summers and the falls and all that we had, the adventures we gave each other, the CBs, the communication, how serious we took things. I love how things get very murky and mystical and love all of that, where you're just living a life that is almost like a universe away from the adult world. But in this case, the adult world and the world of these kids are almost overlapping each other. Like I said, I haven't watched the last 2 episodes. That'll happen tonight. Great, 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 great. I love this. So good. So you get a lot of Stephen King types of feelings out of this. You get a little bit of, you know, the kind of the John Carpenter feeling, even though that's late 70s with Halloween. But it's got a sort of a Haddonfield type of feel, you know. And of course, there's nothing better than that. What climate are we in up here? What is it? In New York. Anybody can tell me the type of climate? In either case, anywhere in the country or in the world that kind of has that greater New York type of September, October feel, that fall, autumn feel, that foliage feel, that crispy type of Halloween feel. Oh, man, I am down. I am down with that. With overcast days and nights and hoodie weather, wearing jackets and long pants, and making your way through a wooded area, crunching through and sloshing through freshly fallen leaves. Awesome. You can't get better atmosphere than that. Absolutely not. Especially not for something as creepy as this. And it's so well done. And Winona Ryder, holy shit. Winona Ryder is fantastic. Temperate? I was thinking. I was about to say temperate. I just didn't know if that was right. But temperate woodland. We definitely have a lot of woodlands around here. It would be all woodlands if it wasn't for all the development. You can tell what this part of New York and above and Upper Westchester and beyond was definitely like. Yeah, so... there is that. But tonight, guys, we have a really, really interesting list of things we have to do. The first thing we're going to do, we're going to call up Dr. Callie Estes. Okay. Now, she is an addiction expert. And listen to this. She's a specialist on this. I have some stuff on here, over here on her. She's an addiction specialist and founder of the Addictions Academy. Dr. Callie Estes, she's partnered with the New Jersey's officer, T.J. McWayne, to develop the first course of its kind, teaching police officers to stop arresting addicts. Now, I want you guys to really put some questions in the chat room. We have a lot of conversations that border around this. The legality of drugs, decriminalization or legalization of drugs, how the drug war has actually hurt people more than the drugs have at times, as far as how it messes up their entire futures, whether they're students or somebody who's just getting out of college or something like that and looking to get a job, or someone who's getting out of jail for a nonviolent drug-related crime and is looking to restart their life and actually get a fresh start. So there's a lot of places that this conversation can go that we've discussed in the past. So anything you guys want to know and want to contribute to this conversation, I will be checking in on the chat room. So I thought this was very, very interesting. Let's read a little bit more. We're going to call her up in about 9 minutes. It all started 4 years ago when Officer McWayne found Greg Maurer slumped over in a steering wheel in a Wendy's drive-thru. Maurer had become well known to the West Deptford police as he struggled with addictions to heroin and cocaine, and McWayne had been there for more than a handful of his arrests. Thanks to Dr. Callie Estes' certifications course in intervention, Dr. McWayne offered help to Maurer instead of arresting him. He was the first officer to take Dr. Estes' interventions course. Here's a quote. "I never had an officer who asked, 'Do you want help?' They would throw me in a cell because they've arrested me 5 times for the same thing," Maurer said. "This is something we need to solve. Throwing them in jail won't solve it." Now McWayne, Maurer, and Dr. Estes are partnering to bring awareness to officers around the country. They're teaching free intervention courses to first responders and are helping to, number one, spot the signs of addiction, number two, determine if an individual is under the influence as well as their level of danger, number three, provide them with a database of individuals who are willing to take the arrested person straight to treatment free of charge. Treatment centers have been lining up to be partners with police departments in the area to house individuals who are struggling. And lastly, encourage officers to offer individual choice, jail or treatment. 4 out of 5 times the person chooses to get help. I thought that this was such a great guest to have on. Her publicist came and found me, and I hope to be doing more work with this publicist, because these are great conversations to be had. And I'll try to get you guys some more stuff to read up on, but that is what we're going to have on in about 7 minutes. Now, in the meantime, if you guys want to call in right now and maybe just put your question out in the open right now, by all means, please call in. We have a couple minutes before we get her on, and we can do that. While you're debating on whether or not you want to call in, I gotta say, I'm loving all the everybody who has taken up the $17.76 Patreon rewards package for this show, for supporting this show. If you've donated $17.76 before I officially made the actual $17.76 package, which includes the handwritten letter, the pen pals package, and all that other stuff, please go and edit your pledge so that you are officially into that, because every month, I think on the 5th, is when all of the addresses are going to be, the shipping addresses will be sent to me so that I can write you your letter. And of course, everybody gets a shout out on the air, and you get a special invite to all the Google Hangouts that we do and all that stuff. So if you've done that before but haven't edited your pledge, please go do that, because I want to make sure that you guys are the first to get your letters, because that all starts, all this stuff starts on, I believe, the 5th of September. Did I say October? 5th of September. So there's that. There is that. And Nikki, the Skype has been on since before I went live. So you needed to have started drinking a long time ago. You know, a higher patriotic number to donate, Nikki asked. I don't know. 1776. I mean, we can go 1791 for the Constitution. But that's, we're just talking pennies then. I mean, we're only in 2016. The most you could ever do is $20.16. So it's really, let's 1776 was the best it got. Well, actually, no, it wasn't. We still had a long fight. Still had a long fight still in 1776. But what else do we have tonight after Dr. Estes is off of the program? Well, we have a few things here. A few things that I have not gotten around to. Number one, we have this Milgram experiment that Gadget Doc brought up last night. I went out and I found a really concise 2 minute and 25 second or so video that we can bring up just to show the effects of authority and getting people to do things that they probably wouldn't have done with their better intentions or with their under other circumstances. We are talking about the secretary, the 105-year-old secretary of Joseph Goebbels, who was Hitler's chief propagandist in Nazi Germany. And not that she was responsible directly for any of the atrocities that Hitler or Goebbels were responsible for, but still we're wondering, you know, how does such a crazy, maniacal person like a Hitler or a Stalin or a Mao or a Pol Pot or Che Guevara or anybody else are able to get people to commit acts that are so atrocious without checking their conscience? But as you're going to see in this experiment, it's not that people don't have a conscience. It's just that someone else claims to take the burden off of their shoulders, the spiritual burden off of their shoulders, and that there's other players at work. Now, of course, we all know that when despotic regimes get into office in any kind of country around the world through any phase of our history, it naturally attracts the Napoleonic complex jackboot wearing thugs that just have always wanted to wear some kind of a badge of authority and beat back on all the people that might have beaten back on them in high school, or maybe the people who didn't have as loving parents as somebody else. Okay, so there is that. When you talk about police state, it's another one of those self-fulfilling prophecies. The stricter it gets and the more brutal it needs to become in order to maintain order, the more it is going to attract people who are willing to get brutal for the sake of maintaining that order and being a part of the in crowd, even though you are on the at the outskirts of the in crowd if you're one of the enforcers. The outskirts. You do all of the dirty work, you get all of the blame, and there you go. The ones who are really holding all the strings keep getting elected. But in either case, we'll get around to that. We also have some scientific, new scientific journal comes out and says, uh-oh, no evidence for gender identity. As if we needed more scientists to come out and say that if somebody feels they are a boy or a girl, then they are so. We needed science to back that up or dispute that. Well, it's here. We'll talk a little bit about that because we haven't gone around to the whole gender identity arena in a couple of months, so that'll be fun. But in either case, let's get to our guest of honor for the night. I wanted to read this off before we got on. Let me see here. Dr. Callie Estes, founder of the Addictions Coach and the Addictions... Hold on a second. Addictions Academy, celebrity addiction specialist, life coach, and interventionist. She has been featured on top outlets like Los Angeles Times, Fox News, and CNN, and others. And here she is right now with us. Dr. Callie, how are you? My name is Frank, and welcome to Quite Frankly.
Thanks, Frank. I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. Now, I got to say, I'm so excited to have you on. As soon as I was talking, as I first had the initial conversation with your publicist, because this is such an interesting line of work that you're in, and it's also something that we discuss on this show in many different forms, but not from the perspective that we know you are going to offer up. And the perspective that we usually come from is in weighing out the effects, the cause, the effect, and the impact of legalization, decriminalization, the overall impact of the war on drugs, and how we are actually helping or hurting people through the way that we enforce drug-related offenses, whether it is in usage or in dealing in non-violent crimes and all that other stuff. And I just want to give you the floor a little bit to really just talk a little bit about your work and where it has led you to this point.
Sure. Okay. So I created different types of classes to train people in coaching and intervention and counseling to help with this epidemic that we have. We just don't have enough trained, qualified people to handle what's happening. So out of that, I started realizing our judicial system is backwards. We're arresting people for a tiny little bit of marijuana. We're arresting people for 2 ecstasy pills. And they're throwing them in jail. They're not getting treatment. They're not getting help. They're basically getting a criminal record. Now they come out and they can't work because now they have a felony. So it does nothing to help the problem, it compounds the problem. So I started talking to several officers and learned that they just aren't educated. They don't know what drug addiction is. They don't know what to look for, and they definitely don't know where to send these people. So they just throw them in jail. So I had the first ever training back in May down here in Fort Lauderdale for free for first responders, police officers, firefighters, EMTs, and it went over really, really well, and they loved it. And then I got a call from the state of New Jersey, and they asked me to come up and do it with 3 municipalities and the state police. And we had 65 people, and we trained them in intervention, what to look for, what to do, and where to send people. And we had 5 different types of places to send them: insurance, cash pay, indigent, anything they needed, we had. And they started to implement it, meaning they're going to arrest someone, and they call one of those 5 providers, and the person comes directly to the site, grabs the person, and puts them in treatment. And it seems to be working. So they called us back. We're going to go back on September 22nd for the lower half of New Jersey, because this was for the upper half. We're going to do the southern tip and more of the state police as well.
I thought
the exact same training.
And I thought it was so inspiring also to see how in this briefing that I got here, well, first of all, I thought that the story between Officer McWayne and Greg Maurer was such a breath of fresh air, because you even said it yourself right now, and before your call commenced, we were even talking about it's not only just the interactions with the police officers, it's not just the jailing, it's not just this ridiculous cycle in which nobody gets the help they needed and the problem is really ultimately ignored, but the residual effect of not being able to get into school, not being able to get a job afterwards because of all of these policies that are really, they're ruining lives just as much as the substance abuse is in many ways, obviously in different ways, but the impact can be felt the same. I thought that this one anecdote over here between Officer McWayne and Maurer, and just the afterwards of being grateful for the choice that was given to him, and just the open nature of the police officers that are now working with you within this frame of thinking, it really is so inspiring.
Yeah, and it's being really, really well received, meaning a lot of the police officers are thankful that they're actually getting the training, and a lot of the loved ones of the people that, you know, are getting arrested are actually thankful that they're getting the help, because it's not just throw them in jail, let them detox, figure it out later, let the judge handle it. It's actually happening in real time, meaning they're getting pulled over and they're saying, what do you want to do? Go to jail, go to treatment? Well, everybody wants to go to treatment, you know, if you're given those 2 choices. So they make the conscious decision to go to treatment instead of going to jail, and they actually get the help that they need, and they say, wow, that could have been really bad. I could have ended up in jail with a felony, you know, and then trying to find a job would be a disaster. So we're getting really good feedback from it. Everybody seems to be pleased.
And I saw this one thing here when it was talking about how right off the bat you had organizations stepping forward. What kind of organizations have stepped forward to offer up help, to take people in who are choosing to get help? I thought that was really fantastic to hear.
Yeah, there's a couple different nonprofits, and what they specialize in is helping someone who needs to navigate the system. So a lot of the nonprofits were created by mothers of children who overdosed. And in that particular training that we did, the middle one, we had three different organizations in attendance that were nonprofit-based, just trying to help a person navigate the system. So as opposed to the 1-800 number you find on TV and call, which is usually a marketer or a marketing company that, you know, it's a pay-per-call kind of a thing. So it's not really, you're not like calling the treatment center per se. You're navigating the system for someone who's getting paid to navigate it for you. This sense, these people are non-paid. They show up and they say, how can we help you? What do you need? They get you into the system. If they don't have any money, they will get them the treatment. They might have to wait 2 or 3 weeks to get it, but they'll walk them through the system. So they stepped up to say, let us help these people. In addition to that, there were a few treatment providers that came in, provided lunch, provided food for the police officers in exchange to say, this is what we do. And this is how we do it. Here's the number to call us. We'll show up. So there are treatment centers that specialize in different types of things that are offering their assistance. And then there are programs that are also coming forward saying, we don't get paid to do this. We want to help you. So it seems to be very well received.
See, that's another thing right there. We're also, this show and the community of people who watch this show and really contribute to the conversations, we're also very, very big community-minded, free market type of activists, in which, you know, you see a problem and the first thing should be, how can I help, or how can the people who are closest to the problem help, not how could they look for somebody else to step in and fill the shoes. And I think that right off the bat, when you say that you have nonprofits and people who are coming forward who don't get paid but want to help, those really small market solutions instead of this overwhelming monster that is government subsidy that is really part of the same machine that is creating all these problems, is really, really remarkable. I think that's fantastic. And do you know of any other program in the country that's doing the same thing that you are, or is this one of the first of its kind?
We are the first of its kind.
Wow.
I'm sure a bunch of our competitors will jump on the bandwagon and start offering the same type of training. That would be, you know, smart business tactics. But we were the first ones to actually create it and offer it in May, and then again in July and again in September. And so far, no one has stepped up to offer it for free anyway. There's been one other training that's asked for, you know, them to pay, but we're offering it completely free to the first responders, police department, because we want them to get the education.
Now do you take any political type of stances as far as when it comes to the war on drugs itself, or state-by-state legalization or decriminalization, at least, of drugs, so that it's a little bit more... well, let me just ask you about that. Do you have any thoughts on decriminalization of drugs?
Yes, I'm probably one of the loudest speakers on that. Like anything, if you're told you can't have it, the first thing you want is you want it. So I absolutely think marijuana should be legal everywhere. I don't think it's a big deal as much as everyone's making it out to be. And my opinion has always been, I would rather have someone smoke a bowl than stick a needle in their arm, hands down.
Yeah.
And the worst you're going to do if you get high on marijuana is eat brownies and play Xbox. You're not going to rob a house. You're not going to pawn jewelry. You're not going to kill somebody in the car because you're all looped up out of your mind. So I don't see why that's such a big deal. As for some of the other drugs, I think there's way too much prescription, way too much Xanax, way too much Adderall. You go to the doctor and you're literally there for 5 minutes and you say, I have anxiety, and you walk out with 100 Xanax. I think there should be, let's exercise, let's learn how to eat, let's do some holistic stuff first, let's take a look at your stress level. You know, if you're anxious or you have ADD, what's going on in your life? Not just here's a pill. So I think I'm very much the proponent of all of that. I also don't believe in Suboxone, methadone, and Vivitrol.
Well,
so I'm also very against that.
And it's what's scariest is one of the most recent headlines in the last couple of months, at least, in the prescribed medicine field, is that it is now okay for kids as young as 11 years old to be prescribed OxyContin. And
oh, yeah, I think that's ridiculous.
It is the scariest thing in the world for anybody who is an unbiased observer to say, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Exactly. We're going to have to take these kids off of it. Now, I understand if you have a child who is end stage 4 cancer, okay. If we think they're going to die in the next few weeks, that's one thing. But to be able to say, okay, let's make this judgment call for the doctors to prescribe what they want when they want, that's a huge problem. And it's just going to compound the issue that we have.
Not only that, but we have over, and this has been a steady statistic for a while now, over 100,000 prescription drug-related deaths a year. That's been a stat that has been pretty consistent that people don't really like to talk about. And meanwhile, like you said, you have lives that are being ruined because of, you know, 20 bags of marijuana. Now, on the other hand, when police officers are finding people slumped over in a heroin stupor in their cars, that's another thing altogether. So when you think about decriminalization, and obviously when people talk about decriminalization or outright legalization, it always comes around to crystal meth, heroin, crack cocaine. What do you say to people who say you want to make it okay for people to get that? What do you say to that?
Well, here's the thing. If we modeled ourselves after Europe, we would have a lot less crime. Europe, Portugal specifically, has decriminalized a lot of things, drugs first. And if you look at Amsterdam with the marijuana and the sex trade, when you legalize something, first of all, the government would get a big revenue share. So number one, we'd have that. Number two, if it's out there and available, people don't want it. That's just human nature. As soon as you can have anything you want, you kind of go, eh, I'm bored.
Especially relationships.
True. So as soon as it's put in front of you, in the very beginning, of course, the drug use will go up, the deaths will go up, and then it's going to go down because people are going to say, I don't want to get high because I can go to the corner store and get anything I want. I'm bored. What other activity can I do? That's what's going to happen because that's human nature. Mm. And part of the whole process of getting high is getting the drug, finding it, the criminal side, going into the hood to buy it. There's a whole process behind it that's just as alluring as getting high. And then heroin's a whole different monster. It goes from getting high to I just don't want to get sick. And that's where a lot of our people are now. It isn't that they just want to get high. All these people want to use drugs to get high. They've been using Oxy and Roxy from the doctor, and now that that's cut off, they used heroin to continue to get high, and now they just don't want to get sick. So we have a whole different issue that's created. So I think there's a lot of things we could do differently to help what's happening and make things a lot better and a lot easier for a lot of people. Our government just doesn't want to do that.
It's true. It really is true. And we do cover it on a nightly basis. Like I said before, it's one of the greatest reasons why I left at the opportunity to speak to you, because you're offering an insight and experience that we just only speculate about. And it really is interesting how you really bring down the human condition once again. What we do, just as across the board behavioral traits of how human beings make decisions, what causes them to rebel, whether it be against their parents or whether it be against whatever. It's always about a rush, a seeking, anything like that. And it really is important for people to keep those decision-making processes in mind when trying to think about how we can help people avoid this stuff. Well, one thing would be to take the allure away from it, to take away the danger from it. As far as when I say danger, it's not that you're going to make heroin the substance any less dangerous. I mean, you know, the act of acquiring and finding a place to use and having it be such a social taboo. That's what I mean. And I really, really appreciate that articulation on the subject.
Now, the interesting part, when I taught the class in New Jersey, I had 65 police officers. Out of that, 10 of those were roughly EMT, not PD. So out of the 55 police officers, I asked them a question, and I said, how many of you believe drug dealers should be in jail? Well, all of them. Then I said, how many of you believe drug users should be in jail? Only 3 raised their hands. And out of those 3, I said, tell me why. And the one guy stood up and he said, because they're junkies there, and he went into explicit. They belong in jail. And I said, okay, based upon what information? And he goes, they're breaking the law. So I said, purely because they break the law, they belong in jail. He goes, yes. So I said, it's not a moral issue for you. It's a law issue. And he said, yes. The law is the law. If you break it, you go to jail. So I said, what if we change the law? And he goes, then I follow the law. So if the law changes, I change. I said, okay. The second guy stood up and he said, absolutely not. It was a moral issue. Drug addicts or junkies, they can stop whenever they want. So with him, I said, you don't understand addiction. You don't have the tools to understand addiction. For you to tell me it's a choice, you don't have the education. So let's educate you. By the end of the class, he had decided it wasn't a choice. And he was fence-sitting because now he was confused as to why we're arresting them. If we're arresting them to throw them in jail and not offering them services, how is that solving the issue? Mm. The third guy was kind of just going with the pack. He was part of that pack. And then when the other two couldn't decide on how they felt, he stood there and he said, this goes against everything we're taught. He said, we're taught, you break the law, you go to jail. We're taught junkies are bad people. You watch these ads and people shooting heroin are doing it behind a dumpster. He goes, they're not your next door neighbor mowing the lawn. They're not the CEO of Google. And I said, well, that's where you're wrong. The media has tainted what you should believe. I said, because I can tell you, I work with Google, I work with Yahoo, and I work with Bing, and there are CEOs shooting up heroin. I can tell you that. It's not just the junkie next door with no money in a trailer. I said, that's what the media wants you to believe. I said, so you guys don't have all the information. So that's what the other piece I'm hearing. And at the end of the class, that all but the one gentleman who said, it's the law, had come kind of over to our side and said, well, obviously we need to come up with a new solution. So it was so nice to hear a collective group say, what do we do? How do we change some of our belief systems? Because this started in the 80s with the whole war on drugs nonsense. Mm-hmm. If we just make laws tougher, drug addicts will stop. No, it got worse. So we should learn from it getting worse and say, wait a minute, if 36 years ago, we declared war on drugs and it didn't work, guess what? We need to change our thinking. It's not going to just keep, you know, pounding into people's heads is not going to make it better. Arresting people for small, you know, little bits of marijuana and giving them 10 years prison time, that's ridiculous. Let's solve the problem. Now we have overcrowding of prisons. It's just a mess.
It's true. It is very, very true. And you bring up such great points. And I wish, obviously, it's patient doctor confidentiality, but I'd love to learn more about just the types of people, not the actual people, the types of situations that you deal with, because we just speculate. We think about the people shooting up behind the dumpsters. We don't go outside, and like you said, it's a picture that the media paints. But doctor, I'd love to know, how can people at home read more about the ongoing work that you're going to be doing? Where can they find you? How can people reach out and connect to your cause?
Sure. We are at theaddictionscoach.com or callieestes.com or theaddictionsacademy.com. Mm-hmm. Or they can call me at 1-800-706-0318 extension 2. And whether it's a client seeking help or a person who wants to get trained, we can do that as well.
Doctor, this has been such a fantastic call. I don't want to keep you for too much longer, but before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to leave us with? Just anything at all, because I know that you probably have so much in there, I don't even know what the hell to ask right now. I want to just draw it all out of you, but we don't have all night. Is there anything you want to leave us with as we wrap the call up?
Sure. If you know anybody who is struggling, give us a call. We will point you in the right direction. We are not bound to any one specific treatment facility, so we can provide you with the proper location. If you do want to learn how to help people, give us a call. We will get you trained and get you in the industry to help save lives.
Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Callie Estes. And whenever you're in New York, I'd love to have you actually in studio with us.
I would love to do that. Just let me know.
No, definitely. Thank you so much, and we will be in touch. Have a fantastic evening.
Thanks. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. What a great, great call. I knew it was going to be a good one, but what a great call. And she does such fantastic work. That was Dr. Callie Estes, everybody. So please check her out. Got a lot of links that she gave out there. I have a few more here. The Addiction Academy. TheAddictionsAcademy.com, that's one of them. We'll go through that later. I'll put all the links in the description of this podcast episode once we upload it. But for everybody that's watching right now, I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed that call. We're going to go a really quick break. When we come back, we have a couple of things that I want to get around to. It's 7:35 p.m. It's such a great night, isn't it? Such a fantastic night. Fantastic. We'll be right back.
Bulletproof has always been about identifying and taking advantage of every single thing that makes people perform better. When you drink it, you just don't care about food. No cravings, no hunger for 4 to 6 hours, and you feel a kind of mental clarity that you probably haven't felt in years.
Have you heard of Bulletproof coffee? I tried it today. I feel pretty good.
Entertainment Network on ZenLive.tv.
Oh, I saw Matt walked in. What's going on, Matt?
What's up, bro?
Doing well, man. How about you?
I'm all right.
You
suppose?
Are? Good. Good to hear. Very happy to hear that about you. Here is something I wanted to bring up real quick. Because pretty much all of the conspiracy theories, anybody who knows me, and by the way, I saw this in the chat room, everybody said that the show has raised over $100 a month already in funding, and that Frank has to do a show in guinea tea. No. I said 100 patrons, and we get a guinea tea show once a month, okay? I said 150 patrons, and we get a topless show. Okay? There's a reason why I said 150 patrons. Okay? And that's so I can get my chest looking real good. Okay? Because I know it's going to take a while. Really not. What's that?
But turn into, what am I listening to? Shirtless show.
Yeah. Well, this is the ransom from the chat room.
Sick minds.
Hey, listen.
Sick people.
They know how they want their conversation. They know how they want their conversation served up.
Never forget, everybody. I know what Frank likes.
Yeah, Mike knows what I like. They want their news, their issues, and their social commentary served up on a shirtless platter. And I'll give it to them.
Somebody on YouTube was looking for you too, Frank.
Who?
Somebody on YouTube was looking for you. Are you single?
I saw that. I saw that on the Yes and No.
Yeah.
On the Yes and No cover. They wanted to know if I was into guys. Nope, sorry, my friend. Sorry, my friend. It's all right, though. Enjoy yourself. Treat yourself. All right, guys, so here's what I want to bring up. Listen to this. This is off the Daily Mail. And then I want to read a comment from a friend of mine, another blogger, who's not with us in the chat room. That's the other thing I need to drill home. Our chat room. We have dozens and dozens of people who listen to this show every day as we upload episodes every day. But our chat room is full of scientists, full of military intelligence, military personnel in general. We've got bloggers, avid readers. We've got people whose interests span all walks, all subjects, and we have a great idea of where we want to go as far as our guests, as you heard tonight. This is a very, very... I love the crowd that we hang out with every night. I really, really do. And so many of them don't join us every night because of scheduling conflicts and whatever. And of course, we're all in different time zones. But I have another buddy of mine from Tumblr. He has a couple of blogs. One of them is Matt Ruins Feminism's Shit. Okay, so he pretty much goes after ridiculous third-wave feminist bullshit and, that's just pretty much what it is. I love the Ave Maria. I love the Ave Maria, and I love the way that Luciano Pavarotti sings it. Now, this song is very, 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 very special to me. In a very melancholy, nostalgic way, I've heard this song sung by my father so many times at every funeral of any significance in my life. All the people in my life that have died that have been very, very close to us. My father has ended up singing the Ave Maria. And I've heard, I just heard this sang in so many churches, usually for on sad occasions, but at the same time, there is something so hopeful about it, and I just love it. And I'm a big appreciator of Western culture, and no matter where you are in your life as far as spirituality and or religion, I'm a lot more spiritual than I am religious, but you can't take away what Western culture and, you know, religion has given to the world as far as music and art. Oh my God, it melts me. It melts me. And as an observer and a fan of mankind, for as much as I have a lot of problems with what's happened with mankind, so gorgeous. And here's another one. Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong, Summertime. So with that, let's keep going. EU chief Jean-Claude Juncker. He says, borders are the worst invention ever. He widens the rift with European leaders as he calls for open borders. Okay, here's a couple of things here. Juncker risks widening splits with EU leaders with contentious remarks. Says borders should be scrapped despite migrant rush and terror attacks. Insists a stronger EU is better. A better and best way to combat the, listen to this, rising trend in nationalism. There's no rising trend in Islamic terror. There's no rising trend in unchecked migration and the losing of culture from all four corners of the world, in the Western world. There's no rising trend in anything like that. The rising trend that we must be concerned with is people who take pride in where they come from. And their ancestors, and their cultures, their food, their way of life, their music, the progressive way they live, their fashion, the way they treat women, the way they treat people who might be considered sexual deviants in other parts of the world. Nationalism. Nationalism is what we need to be afraid of. Now, we don't even have to read this article, because we've had this conversation so many times over, but here you go. An EU chief who's coming out and just saying it now. Ladies and gentlemen, and anybody who knows this show, or knows just me in general over the last 10 years of speaking into microphones, I have stayed away from Alex Jones in such a way, because bringing up his name destroys credibility. Just like bringing up Ahmadinejad or whatever, however the hell you say his name from Iran, destroys credibility of anybody who's ever dabbled in 9/11 truth and looking into the official story of 9/11 and whatnot. Whenever somebody comes out who is of, you know, a social undesirable and says something that might be worth looking into, of course, that is the pigeonholing effect. But like I've said in the last couple of weeks, Alex Jones runs a radio show. He's got pretty good writers on his staff, but he runs a radio show that is entertainment and news. So much more entertaining. He's a comedian to me, okay? And he doesn't even know it. It's hilarious to me. But other than that, you cannot tell me that everything people like him who have been crucified and offered up as the kooks of the biggest kooks of the land up on the altar of conspiracy theorists who must be ignored at all costs, he's being proven right. Everything's being proven right. The globalist world elite, global bankster plots, it's all true. It's all true. And nationalism, the thing that people were being convinced is a very, very ugly thing, because of course some of the worst things that have ever been done, of course, had very, very big nationalist overtones. Fascism doesn't work without nationalism, okay? But of course, like the crazies around the world who subscribe to certain ways of thinking and certain ways of conducting themselves and certain ideas, because there are crazy people out there, just like there have been crazy movements out there that have sullied concepts that are otherwise harmless when put into the hands of people who are, you know, of sound mind. It's all the same thing. Remember, microcosm, micro-macro, micro-macro. You take a crazy guy, and then you take a crazy bunch of people who know how to organize a community. Who know how to organize a community. Sooner than later, they're walking in straight lines. They're marching around with armbands and berets. Everybody's dressed the same. It's very, very cute. Everybody's on the same page. It's great. But here we are. Because of that push, and because people are starting to respond with, no, no, this is our home. There's nothing wrong with it. Germans don't want to see, don't think so highly of their country that they want to see Spain wiped off the map. The Portuguese don't think so. If you're a Portuguese national, you don't want to see Spain fall into the Atlantic Ocean. Of course, then you'd go too because you're attached. But if you're Portuguese, you don't want to see Estonia wiped off the face of the earth just because. There is nothing wrong. You're talking about diversity? Nationalism is diversity. Nationalism is diversity. The diversity that everybody else is talking about, this multiculturalism stuff, that's a smoothie. Remember, nationalism is diversity. That makes Europe the cornucopia, the bowl of fruit, instead of the smoothie that people like Juncker over here want to turn everything into. An identityless, misery-laden soup of losers. And when people see what's being taken from them and they respond in the natural way, of course, this might all be the reason behind it. Just like Dr. Callie Estes talks about, knowing how human beings think and how they react is a huge way of diffusing some of the problems in humanity, whether it be drug-related causes or whether it be what's going on in Europe. If you are betting against humanity and you're trying to take everything you know to be Western culture down, then what would you do? You would subvert them psychologically. You would pin them into a corner where if they say anything, they could have the hammer of justice slammed down on them, knowing that eventually there will be an uprising. And then what better way to call for that Emperor Palpatine's swift army of the Republic to sweep through and put everything down to where it should be? Now, I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, because, of course, we talked about that last week. Mr. Jimmy called in ChemQuiz, that's his blog, on Tumblr, and said he doesn't see anything like that happening, of course. You know, but look at this. Look at this. Pretty interesting. The Skype is on, of course. You can call in any time. Let's see what's going on in the chat room. It's not a smoothie. It's more like chum or slop, Ann Caparato says. Ann Caparato also says, Alex Jones as Surgeon General, selling his water filters and supplements. Hey, they're not supplements, Ann Caparato. They're nutraceuticals. Don't call them supplements. Come on, that's not fair. They're nutraceuticals. Ann Caparato also says, if there's no other reason to like Donald Trump, it's because he's down with Alex Jones. Yeah, totally. Totally. But that was also his appearance on Alex Jones' show. Anthony had brought this up a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about whether or not Donald Trump actually was a plant for Hillary Clinton, when he was saying that Hillary and Obama were, in fact, the founders of ISIS, but not providing any context to what he meant, and just leaving it at the founders, trust me, they are, but not giving the context. When he did that, we started thinking, why is he doing this? When he can actually drop some truth right now, why is he doing this? And Anthony said, to be honest, I have a feeling like he's a plant for Hillary. And maybe that's why he would call into Alex Jones's show back in 2015. You know, what easier way to label him as a kook than to put him in the same pen as Alex Jones? Then again, Ron Paul, he's a favorite, a libertarian favorite of all of ours. Ron Paul's a free market, free humanity favorite of all of ours, and he's called into Alex Jones on dozens of occasions. Dozens of occasions. So there is that too, you know. Maybe some people just aren't afraid of getting press wherever they can dig it up. Man. So, 750. Matt, what do you think about this?
I try not to think about it because this shit just stresses me out.
Yeah. And joining us right now from Colorado is Max and Caparato. What's going on, my friend? What do you think, real quick? We have about 5 minutes until I have to do the end of the show plugs.
Well, I think we're getting onto the topic here. What is Donald Trump's role in this election? And I just went on Facebook, and I wanted to do a little experiment. Look at the likes for Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton on Facebook.
What is
it? And you'll see that Donald Trump has about 11 million, just shy of 11 million. Okay, it's 10,425,487 people. Mm. Okay. Hillary Clinton.
Four million, 3 million.
Yeah, it's fucking chump change compared to him. And like, for me personally, like, and I'm here in Colorado where allegedly Clinton is leading like 20 points in the polls.
I don't believe any of it.
I've met one Hillary Clinton supporter, and she's like the chairman of the Boulder County Democratic Party.
Dude, let me just say this, and you let me know what you think.
Bernie Sanders stickers are everywhere.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead.
I think the silent people are still afraid of being called a racist for supporting Trump, they're everywhere.
Oh, they're gonna do their thing silently.
People want me to grab my cat.
But wait a second. Here's the thing I wanted to ask you. I mean, obviously, we are not. It's not like we've been in the Trump camp or anything like that. We just know that what we are left with right now and the storylines that are playing out, we have made our decisions as far as, you know, what makes more sense than anything else. But, and calling out, you know, calling a spade and just knowing what things are, where things are. And do you really think, this is not saying as somebody who's already trying to cop out to a Trump, over a Donald Trump loss in this election, but Hillary Clinton, the DNC, it's already been shown they stole one election. One election, really, the primaries never happened for Democratic voters. It never happened. It was stolen. It was planned from the beginning. So with that being said, what is really to say that this one is not going to be stolen? What is to say that this thing is over before it started? Even though, like you said, I can't find, I found Hillary supporters, but still.
I haven't found, like, Hillary supporters that are, like, diehard, wear the gear, have a hat and a shirt and a sticker and everything like that. But anyways, I think that, please repeat the short end of that question.
The short end of the question is, I mean, with all the evidence we've seen with the primaries, what is to say that the general has not already been stolen? Plans have not already been set?
Stolen general election. I think they might have done it with Romney. If you look at the statistics, that there were millions more people voting for Romney than did McCain, and yet Obama still won, right?
Yeah,
that's a little weird.
There's been cases where
there were cases in inner city districts where Romney literally got zero votes. I mean, like, just statistically, most people can't even fill out a form with their own name on it correctly.
Yeah.
I'm just not most people. I'm saying like 1 out of 100 at least.
Gypsy, you were going to say something.
I was going to say. Oh shit! I lost my point, dude.
There's been a lot of dead people voting. There has been zero voter outcome for certain candidates. That is definitely odd. And, of course, the whole voter ID thing continues to be lumped in with the racism stuff, which is absolutely ridiculous. If you look at what the voting laws are in Mexico, if you look at how much on lock Mexico has their elections as far as who is able to vote and as far as place of origin of birth and everything else and one vote per person and free IDs for everybody to make sure that things aren't going wrong, it is unbelievable to me. We'll cover that in another show because we only have 3 minutes left, though.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. I was going to say, as far as Trump, Hillary's actually getting a lot of Republican support as well. So as far as it being rigged, it would be from both sides to not put Trump in there. Like it wouldn't just be a Democratic conspiracy.
What happened in Colorado, right? Where they basically canceled the election, the primary election, and gave all the delegates to Cruz. And, like, obviously, if you took a poll of people in Colorado, 40% or 30% would have been Trump supporters. Mm. But they gave all 21 or whatever of Colorado's.
That's what they had set up out there, though. That was, they've had that set up since, like, what, the 19th century or something like that?
Yeah, to be fair about it. But the party officials are supposed to be able to, or they're supposed to construct their delegates based upon what the general party support is. Now that the Republican Party in Colorado has basically been an oligarchy, and there's a Freedom Caucus that has been trying to take control for the last 10 years at least.
Yeah, that's the one that we've been following a little bit. Hey, Max, would you be able to call in to figure this out, to continue this tomorrow? We have to make way for the next show.
Yeah, oh, thank you.
Dude, thank you so much for the call. Well, we're going to continue this tomorrow because this this one article over here still isn't done. I still want to read our buddy's comment on that, so we'll start with this off tomorrow. We'll also do elections. We will do this new study on gender identity, which is really, really refreshing. And also, yeah, a few other things we had going on. But other than that, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Callie Estes, for a fantastic call tonight. And also, please check out patreon.com/ quite frankly. This show is powered by you guys. I work for you guys. And I have some really great packages up there. I want to be writing letters to at least 20 of you guys. So get on out there and see if $1 or $5 is good for you. If not, it's totally fine. I just appreciate you hanging out with us. But in either case, thank you so much for the support. I cannot wait for 7 o'clock tomorrow to hang out with you guys once again. Coming up next is Broken Filter Live. And yeah. The train rolls on. Tomorrow we're going to have Sean Plunkett on with us. Thursday we're going to have Professor Lawson Bowling on with us. So you guys are going to get some great programs for the rest of this week. Have a good night and be well. And we'll see you at 9 o'clock for ZNY. Might only be about 20-minute broadcast, but still, it'll do something.